This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Good morning to you. It's Tuesday, August 17th, 2021. I'm Gail King. That's Anthony Mason. That's Tony DeCopel.
Welcome to CBS This Morning. And before we get to more news out of Afghanistan, we have some breaking news overnight on vaccines that we want to tell you about right away. Sources are telling CBS News the White House is expected to recommend COVID booster shots for nearly all Americans who got one of the two-dose vaccines. Now, these boosters would come about 8 months after your second dose. And for now, it would apply only to people who receive the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines, only because there's not enough data yet about Johnson & Johnson. Now, the shots could start as early as mid-September if they're approved by the FDA. This new guidance would apply to all Americans who have received those shots, and the first shots would likely go to nursing homes, healthcare workers, and other older Americans. And remember, the U.S. already formally recommended booster shots for people with weakened immune systems. These boosters would be an extra dose of the vaccine that they have already received. And the context, of course, is it's all coming in response to the dangerous Delta variant currently overwhelming hospitals all across the country. We're going to have more on all of that in our next half hour.
Can't wait to hear. Turning now to Afghanistan, where the Taliban is tightening its grip on the country and many American citizens remain stranded, unable to leave. In his first public comments on the Afghan government's sudden collapse, President Biden insisted the U.S. was right to withdraw its military. This morning, a Taliban official announced a nationwide amnesty and called for women to join the new government. Now, 20 years ago, under Taliban rule, women could not hold jobs, girls could not go to school, and women could not even leave their homes without a male relative. Roxana Saberi is in Kabul with more on the story. Roxana, good morning to you.
The airport here in Kabul is open again today, but for now only for military flights. The U.S. Charge d'Affaires says he'll stay here to help evacuate American citizens and vulnerable Afghans. These were the lucky ones. One Afghan who crammed into a U.S. military plane yesterday shared this video exclusively with CBS News, showing Afghans airlifted out of Kabul airport, leaving behind scenes of desperation. Others trying to flee the Taliban, clinging to the aircraft as it took off. At least four fell to their deaths.
It's gut-wrenching. It's scary. It gives you the feeling of abandonment.
This man is hiding from the Taliban. For his safety, we'll call him Ahmad.
Nobody, none that I know has slept. We're waiting, you know, in fear that they will come soon.
What do you think they would do to you if they found you or your family?
You know, if they take us, the imminent is, you know, death.
As a senior aide to a high-ranking official with the now former Afghan government, he says since the Taliban captured Kabul on Sunday, they've already kidnapped two of his colleagues. Ahmad says while President Biden promised yesterday to help evacuate Afghans who worked for the U.S., the administration is ignoring tens of thousands of others here who helped America.
The Afghan people helped them, you know, fight terrorism, al-Qaeda. We were called allies.
Today, a Taliban official promised an amnesty for all Afghans, implying the group won't target people like Ahmad.
When the Taliban say they won't harm people like you, you don't believe them?
None of us believe them, no.
The Afghan man who filmed that video inside the U.S. military plane yesterday said he rushed onto it without a visa or passport. He said a U.S. soldier pushed some people off. He thought he would die, he said, but he made it out of Afghanistan.
Roxana Saberi in Kabul for us. Roxana, thank you very much. President Biden defended his decision to withdraw the remaining U.S. troops from Afghanistan in his first public remarks on the Taliban takeover. The president blamed the government's collapse on the nation's leaders and military, saying they were unwilling to fight for their country. He spoke after hearing repeated accusations that his administration had abandoned Afghanistan's people. Ed O'Keefe is at the White House for us. Ed, good morning. What else did the president say?
Tony, good morning to you. As the president explained his decision to leave Afghanistan, he said that as the fourth U.S. president to oversee military operations there, the country should have withdrawn far sooner.
I stand squarely behind my decision.
President Biden defiantly defended his plan to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan.
The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated.
The president called Afghanistan's collapse proof that no amount of military force could ever guarantee a stable regime. Recent CBS News polling shows 77% of Americans supported the U.S. withdrawal, and Mr. Biden said he delivered on a campaign pledge to finally end the nearly 20-year conflict.
While it's been hard and messy, and yes, far from perfect, I've honored that commitment.
But Mr. Biden also blamed Afghan leaders and the Afghan military for failing to fight the Taliban.
American troops cannot and should not be fighting in a war and dying in a war that Afghan forces are not willing to fight for themselves.
President Biden has faced criticism from Republicans.
What we have seen is an unmitigated disaster, a stain on the reputation of the United States of America.
And Democrats.
The question here is whether this is going to be Saigon or Dunkirk. Are we going to leave people behind as we did in South Vietnam, or are we going to hold the beach until everybody is taken off that beach? I hope that it's the latter.
Mr. Biden also offered some explanations for the evacuation scramble.
Part of it because the Afghan government and its supporters discouraged us from organizing a mass exodus to avoid triggering, as they said, a crisis of confidence.
There was a notable statement overnight from former President George W. Bush, who ordered the invasion of Afghanistan nearly 20 years ago and last month criticized the U.S. withdrawal. He said in a statement with his wife, the former First Lady Laura Bush, that they've watched the tragic events unfolding in Afghanistan with deep sadness. Speaking about Afghans who are now at the greatest risk because of the Taliban takeover, they said, "We have the responsibility and the resources to secure safe passage for them now without bureaucratic delay." And the Bushes told those who served, "You kept America safe from further terror attacks, provided two decades of security and opportunity for millions, and made America proud." Also notable that overnight, the Democratic chairman of the Senate Armed Services and Intelligence Committee said they plan to hold hearings and investigations into how it is that Afghanistan collapsed so quickly. Anthony?
Ed, thank you. Retired Army General H.R. McMaster was President Trump's national security advisor in 2017 and 2018. Before that, he served in Afghanistan as a senior military commander. General, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Anthony. Good to be with you.
Is it your belief, General, that we should not have left Afghanistan?
Absolutely. And I think you can just see that based on the tragedy that's unfolding before our eyes. And of course, we're seeing a humanitarian catastrophe, Anthony, but it's worse than that. It's going to affect our security. It's going to affect our reputation in the world. And it's going to strengthen the jihadist terrorists who we went to Afghanistan to defeat after the most devastating terrorist attack in history on September 11th, 2001.
General, if you go back through three presidencies, they all wanted to leave Afghanistan. The American public does not support us being there. But you say we talked ourselves into defeat in Afghanistan. What do you mean?
Well, I'll tell you, Anthony, we've had three presidents in a row tell us it is not worth it. But I think what we're seeing today is that the cost of our precipitous withdrawal far exceeds the cost of a sustained and sustainable commitment there. I mean, Anthony, we had, I mean, who knows what the number would be, you know, 8,500, 3,500 troops. But what was important about the, not beyond the numbers, is that Afghans were bearing the brunt of their fight, right, to preserve the freedoms that they've enjoyed since we helped them defeat the Taliban in 2001. 2001, but they were also fighting for us, for all humanity, on a modern-day frontier between barbarism and civilization against jihadist terrorists who are the enemies of all humanity.
Are you suggesting then we should effectively have a permanent force in Afghanistan? Is that your belief?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, Anthony, are we still in South Korea, right? We have 30,000 troops in South Korea. We had 3,500, 2,500 troops most recently in Afghanistan, who, as I said, were enabling the Afghans to bear the brunt of the fight against our common enemies. And the cost of that was minuscule, and it was sustainable. Look at the cost now to the Afghan people, to the world, to humanity. And what was it worth it, right? We can cry all the crocodile tears we want, Anthony, about, you know, Afghan women. But if they don't have the security to prevent, you know, these criminals, these jihadist terrorists who use a perverted interpretation of Islam to justify their criminal acts, then what can you do? You can't do anything without that kind of fundamental security.
But General, I mean, if you look at South Korea, I mean, the people in control there want us there. The difference in Afghanistan is that there's a large element of the country that doesn't.
Did you see the images of people running, you know, yeah, next to that C-17 aircraft? Did they want us there? Or did they want the Taliban there? I think this is really a false narrative. We did everything we could to deliver psychological blows to the Afghan government and the armed forces on our way out, right? We began to negotiate with these criminals in Qatar without the Afghan government. What did that do for the legitimacy of the Afghan government? We made concession after concession. We forced them to release 5,000 of the most heinous people on earth, who returned immediately to the battlefield and began to again victimize the Afghan people. I mean, I don't know. Do you think the Afghan people are welcoming the Taliban under these conditions? I don't think so. Many of them have accommodated with them because why? They looked over their shoulders and said, "Who's got our back?" And we said, "Not us. We're leaving."
But a lot of Americans would look at this, General, and say, "We spent 20 years there, billions of dollars trying to build up their army, which collapsed in a matter of days."
Okay, Anthony, you know, we withdrew 2,500 troops. How many are there now, right? So wars don't end when one party decides to disengage. The Taliban, Al-Qaeda, which is completely intertwined with the Taliban, didn't say, "Oh, hey, the Americans aren't here anymore. Let's just stop the jihad." So we have our own narrative, our narcissistic, self-referential narrative about ending the endless wars. But hey, guess what? Wars don't end when we leave, and our enemies are fighting an endless jihad.
It certainly is a scary situation there right now. General McMaster, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.
Now to Haiti, where Tropical Depression Grace caused flooding overnight in areas already hard hit by Saturday's earthquake. The storm ruined some of the temporary shelters that were set up for those without homes. Now, this comes after rescue teams spent yesterday digging through the rubble, searching for anyone that still could be trapped underneath. More than 1,400 people were killed and thousands more were hurt in the country's deadliest quake since 2010. Vladimir Duté is in the capital with more on the story. Vlad, it's the last thing they need there. What is the situation today?
Gail, right now, hospitals are becoming overwhelmed by the thousands of injured patients, and that is just the hospitals that are still standing. In the hardest hit areas of the island, many are now piles of rubble, leaving those in need of help scrambling.
In the hard-hit town of Lakai, these white tents serve as makeshift triage units for some of those injured in the wreckage. The agony of those being treated is painted on their faces. The small hospitals there can barely take in more patients. For those suffering the most serious injuries, a trip to bigger hospitals like Hôpital d'Adventiste d'Haïti in Port-au-Prince is necessary. Medical director Scott Nelson has been working here since 2010's earthquake.
We have many people that are in the emergency room on the floor and outside for lack of more space.
What kind of injuries are you seeing from these earthquake victims?
With earthquakes, every type of orthopedic injury is produced, and many of these are crush injuries, severe open fractures.
Dr. Nelson took us to the operating room as a patient was undergoing surgery.
Most of these patients have had walls fall on them, sometimes ceilings fall on them. We've had a few jumping injuries, even some that came from close by here where the earthquake wasn't so strong. People jump off of a balcony and have lower extremity fractures from that.
Inside the ward, it's a race to keep up with the massive influx of patients.
Just 3 days ago, This wing was under construction, and it was empty. Now, there's not an empty bed in the entire ward. They've seen over 100 patients in just the last 48 hours.
She has a femur fracture here on the right side and another femur fracture on the left side.
Both of Carlin Bernard's femurs snapped in half as she tried to escape a crumbling market. Hers is just one of thousands of harrowing stories from patients suffering this tragedy.
She could feel the earth shaking, and she started to run. And as she started to run, she was hit by falling debris. And there was a man that was next to her who died, who was crushed by that debris. And she says that God blessed her. She's alive.
Carlin Bernard will have two metal rods placed into her legs. And the good news, Tony, doctors tell us she will be able to walk again after her surgery. Now, that's a much different outcome than many of us saw back in 2010, when many crush victims often immediately faced amputation. Tony?
So, Vlad, let's talk about 2010, because your reporting was powerful then. It's powerful now. What are the biggest changes that you've seen in the response in the emergency operations there in Haiti?
So sadly, Tony, from 2010, one of the things that I remarked when I started to see the video coming in on Saturday was I had a hard time telling the difference between 2010 and 2021, because nothing has been done to ensure the safety of Haitians in the wake of that devastating 2010 earthquake. The other thing, Tony, is the roads. In the entire time that I've been coming to Haiti over the last dozen years, the roads are still insecure. So we have to helo in to the disaster zone because the roads are either impassable because of fallen debris or because they're controlled by bandits. All of these issues that we're talking about, Tony, are man-made. The earthquake is a natural disaster that every country around the planet faces, but many of the problems that Haitians suffer through, all the calamities that they face, have been man-made, Tony.
Yeah, there's what we can control and what we cannot, and there's a big difference between the two. Vlad Duthé continuing his exceptional coverage in Port-au-Prince. Vlad, thank you very much. Back here in the U.S., Tropical Depression Fred will dump heavy rain on the southeast today. Torrential downpours and severe storms are slamming North Georgia this morning, including Atlanta. Tornadoes have been reported in the central part of the state. 4 to 8 inches of rain are expected as the storm moves into the Carolinas. Meanwhile, President Biden has declared a state of emergency in Florida, where Fred made landfall along the Panhandle yesterday and caused widespread flooding and left thousands in the dark.
Thank you for listening to the CBS This Morning podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to get daily podcast originals.
You can watch the CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station or live on the CBS All Access app.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.